Now coming up on Monitor, Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for the unrehearsed conference is Dr. Robert C. Weaver, new administrator of the Housing and Home Finance Agency. Dr. Weaver has played an important role in shaping the president's message on housing and is the man most frequently mentioned to head a proposed new cabinet post for housing and urban affairs. Dr. Weaver will be interviewed by Peter Breistrup of the New York Times, May Craig, Portland Press Herald, Ray Shearer, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. Here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
The administration this past week opened its drive for legislation to stimulate the building industry and to provide more homes, especially for families with moderate incomes. The lead-off witness before the Senate Banking Committee was Dr. Robert Weaver, the new administrator of the Housing Agency, who is our guest today. Dr. Weaver occupies the highest position in the government, administrative position, ever held by a Negro. He has had long experience in housing administration in New York City and state. He is a graduate of Harvard with the degree of Doctor of Philosophy. For some 30 years, he has been a crusader for civil rights, both as a writer and as a consultant to government agencies. Now we're ready for questions. Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Weaver, many people expected an administration housing program that was new, bold, imaginative, massive. Would you say your program was any of those things?
Well, I think it is bold. I think it is massive in the sense that the problem is massive, and therefore we have to have massive tools to deal with it. As far as it's being new is concerned, I think that any legislation in this field has to build upon the past. I think it would be rather foolish to throw out all of the experience of the past and not build on that and try to bring in new elements, but based upon experience that has proven to be successful.
Dr. Weaver, actually, in terms of money, is it much larger than the Eisenhower housing program?
It is somewhat larger, yes.
I think much.
Well, this is a very difficult term to define, Mr. Spivak. It is sizably larger. It is not, I suppose, as large as some people would want it to have it. But I think it's large enough to do the job that we need to do at this time and are prepared to do at this time.
Well, now, is this just a beginning? And is your program going to get bolder as you go along? I mean, is this a first step to make sure that there will be other steps?
Yes, I think there will be other steps. There are certainly some elements in this picture which we were not able to come up with proposals at this time. We didn't have time enough to do it.
The Democratic platform, for example, spoke of 2 million housing starts. You're not going to be able to do anything like that very soon, are you?
Not next year, no, but we expect to have 2 million housing starts by the within the next four or five years.
Now, in terms of money, I've seen varying estimates on how much this is going to increase the budget. I think your figures were something like $138 million, and I believe there have been other figures of $149 million and some of $315 million. Now, how much is this going to increase the budget for fiscal 52?
Well, 62. In fiscal 62, that there will be somewhere in the area of $108 million increased expenditure as a result of this program. And let me say the reason for that is that it takes a long time to tool up many of these programs so that you cannot get the money out immediately.
Did you say 108?
Yes.
Then you've cut it down from 138. Wasn't that your original figure?
I don't know exactly which figure you referred to. This is very difficult. Let me try to break this down. If you take the loans and the mortgage purchases, which are under this program, they amount to roughly $100 million in fiscal 62. And then if you take the grants largely to urban renewal, I'm speaking now of the extra money that the Eisenhower program, that the Kennedy program will involve over what the Eisenhower program involved, you will have some $8 million. And then, of course, there will be a yearly contributions of some $78 million a year for public housing. Therefore, these composite figures are very difficult to come by and to be understandable. But the figure which we now think is the accurate one, would total around $140-some million, with $100 million in these two items of the loans, which are the big new part of the
budget. Now, did the budget arrange that thing with you? The budget director, I think, spoke of about $149 million. There were many people who thought you were going to hit $315 million.
Yes.
Was this a directed budget to
no,
you?
No, this was a matter of making estimates of our new programs and how fast we could tool into them. And this was an estimate which we made jointly with the budget.
Mr. Braestrup.
A good many of the new features in the housing bill seem to me to be clearly aimed at giving private enterprise a last chance to do the job with a little government help. And I talk here of the home improvement loans, the no down payment 40-year mortgage program, and similar programs of this nature. Now, is this, in your opinion, the last chance for the building industry to accomplish the job of building housing for low-income families and modest-income families in our cities and our suburbs?
Well, our philosophy in all of this is that, to the maximum degree possible, private enterprise should do as much of the job as it possibly can. And what we've attempted to do here is to give private enterprise some additional tools to do a larger sector of the job. I wouldn't like to talk in terms of a last chance, because this sounds as though you're threatening somebody. But certainly this is an additional chance to have private enterprise do an additional part of the job.
Do you think that over the long run, that given the present practices, there have been accusations of feather bedding and so on, small building, lack of mass production, that the building industry will ever get to the point where it can do the job without government help?
Well, I think that this is a partnership. I think you do have to have governmental help in this particular area, and I think that there is much that needs to be done, both on the part of getting better tools from government and on the part of getting the home building industry itself to be a more efficient industry than it's been in the past. And here again, I think we need to help them.
Have you gotten any indications that of support from the home building industry for this program? In the past, the real estate lobby and many builders have been against the housing programs under both Eisenhower and Truman. Have you gotten any indications of new support for these new programs to help them?
Well, I think the indications that we have are those that have come forth in the hearings. Here, the home building industry has supported our two major innovations, that is the no-down payment, 40-year loan, and also the rehabilitation program, which we propose. And they have come out against public housing. They've always been against public housing, and we expect them to continue to be against public housing. So I would say, to that degree, we have had some support.
Mrs. Craig.
Dr. Weaver, there is money in the proposed bill for housing for the elderly, and you've been very sympathetic with that. Do you think it's socially a good thing to separate the generations and herd the old people off by themselves away from families?
Well, because the money is separate doesn't mean that the programs will be separate. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in the law, and there's nothing in the administration that we contemplate that will prevent integrating housing for the elderly with existing housing. In some instances, it may be rehabilitated housing. In other instances, it may be a few units here in a larger project. And I might say that this whole area is one, as you know, in which people are not too well of one opinion as to whether it's more desirable to have integration in the sense of having them all in one project or having them near to other people. Certainly most people feel it isn't good to have them all off by themselves, away from other people.
I have seen plans of small houses, that is, where there'd be no stairs and very special things for them. Would you think of small separate houses or apartments or sort of hotels? Or what do you think of for the elderly?
I think of all of these things, Mrs. Craig. I think that we have to have In many instances, particularly in our large cities, these small units, which will be a part of a larger program and a larger development. I think there will be some places where you may have a complete building by itself for the elderly. But these we'll have to experiment, we'll have to try these out, and we'll have to learn as we do. But we certainly will not start out with an idea of putting them all off to themselves.
There's a series running in Life about the plight of the working woman, the mother, who couldn't get a babysitter and couldn't get a servant. Now, Aunt Susie and Grandma used to do that. And if you mix them up, maybe you could get babysitters in the same building with the elderly, do you think?
Well, this would certainly make it attractive to the young married families.
Well,
I don't know how attractive to the elderly
things,
it might be. But there is this fact that the elderly do like to be near where younger people are. They do like to be near children. They don't necessarily want to be living in the same building with them. And there is this proximity, which I think is a very important thing, both from the point of view of the babysitting and making the elderly feel important, and from the point of view of their own happiness.
I ask you this because you have testified as to the contribution that the elderly make in their mature views of things, and that they shouldn't be put on the shelf. I know that you have said that.
Mr. Scherer.
I agree.
Doctor, I wonder if we could move on from babysitters to civil rights for a moment. The president has announced that he plans to take some executive action in the field of civil rights in housing. Now, am I right in surmising that he is delaying action on this so as not to jeopardize the passage of his housing program through Congress?
This I couldn't answer. I couldn't speak for the president. I don't know what's in his mind on this.
Well, you certainly must have talked to him on this subject. When would you look for some action in this field?
I can't speak for him on this. I think that this is his timetable, and what he does will be determined by him in this.
Do you think it's unwise to work for immediate integration in housing?
I don't know what. I don't know whether I understand your question.
How fast do you think this thing should be brought along?
Well, I think that the matter of the policy here is crystal clear. If it's the correct policy, and I think it is, then the time to do it is as soon to get started on it is as soon as possible.
Now, back to the housing bill on the 40-year no down payment $10,000, $15,000 bracket. How are you going to make sure that you're going to have a house standing after 40 years? Isn't there a great policing job involved there?
Yes, this is one of the hazards. We recognize this. We've been very honest about it all along. We believe that a house can be built to last for 40 years, and it's going to be our responsibility to see that these houses are built so they will last for 40 years.
How would you do that? Is that a policing job?
This is a job of inspection. It's a job of design. It's a job of being concerned with the quality of building and the type of materials, etc.
If I may pursue that a little bit more, what effect on housing programs do the many variations in building standards and codes and lack of enforcement have?
Well, there's no question that the diversity of standards, the diversity of codes, is one of the complicating factors and a factor which is very important in the whole matter of the cost of the house. And it's something, it's a long-range problem. It's been with us since the very beginning of this program, of all these activities, and it's something that we're going to have to come to grips with. But it's something we have to study and analyze before we can make recommendations.
You'd like to pull them together?
Yes.
The standards.
Dr. Weaver, on these 40-year loans with no down payment, presumably, as I understand it, a person with no money could theoretically buy a home. Do you think it's wise to encourage people with no money to assume a debt that will not be paid off until the year 2000?
Well, I think this is involves two things. First, the whole mores and the whole folkways of our society now is this is the way people spend money. It's not the way that I was brought up, probably not the way that most of us were brought up, but this is the way people operate today. Secondly, you have to look at the alternative. These people are currently paying very often for substandard housing an equal amount of money. This is the only way that many of these families with children can find housing. They can't rent it. They can't rent decent housing. And finally, although these are 40-year loans, I might say that our experience has shown on our 20-year loans that the average length of the loan is only 10 years. And on our 30-year loans, the average length of the loan is only 12 years. So that many of these people will not be buying over a 40-year period.
Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Weaver, the New York Times a short while ago reported that you would not urge a speedy executive order banning racial discrimination in housing. I gather that report is correct. Will you tell us why, since you have always been very clear on the subject, why you're not urging a speedy end to it?
I don't know what the source of that report was. I have made no statement.
Well, but let's ask the question then. Is it true that you are not urging a speedy end of it, are you?
I am in favor of action to make all housing open to everyone where there is any federal form of assistance involved. As to the timing of this, I think this is a responsibility of the President and of the Congress.
Would you yourself feel, then, that the time is not right at the present time, or you would be urging it, I gather, since you have always been for it?
I'm still for it.
Well,
I am not, however, in the position, and I'm not assuming the position, of determining the timetable on this.
Now, on that, at your confirmation hearing, I think you were asked a question on integrated housing, and according to the Times, again, this was your answer. I don't think I could if I wanted to, and I don't think I should if I could. Now, is that a correct quotation?
Well, if
it is, will you explain that tongue twister to
us? To a particular answer.
Yes.
A question. The question was, would you, as I recall the question, would you immediately end all segregation and would you immediately effect complete integration? And that was my answer to that question.
Then it's the question of immediacy and not the question of the substance of the thing that involves you. May I ask you this other question? Do you think it's going to be possible to end housing segregation by law or executive order as long as people have the right to move away?
Well, remember what I am talking about, and I said this at the hearing and I repeat it again, is equal opportunity. I am talking about a legal system and a system of operations where nobody is denied participation on account of his race, creed, or color in housing which gets public benefits. Now, as to whether or not he avails himself of that or whether or not somebody else lives there or does not live there is something that law cannot and should not control. This is a matter of equal opportunity.
And not an attempt, on your part or anybody else's part to end segregation by law or executive order.
Ultimately, one would hope that this would result in that. But I don't think you can legally change social patterns overnight, but you can take a legal step which is in that direction and will facilitate the end objective that you have in mind.
Mr. Braestrup.
Under previous administrations, the housing program was criticized on two counts, especially in the slum clearance field. One, that the slums were torn down or bulldozered down before housing was ready for the poor families that lived there. And second, that the slums were torn down so that housing for the well-to-do could be put up in their place. What changes, if any, are you going to make in this area?
Well, I think this is one area in which, to get back to Mr. Spivak's earlier question, we do have a big, bold program. In the first place, we are going to be very much concerned with stressing and pushing that type of urban renewal which does not involve the bulldozer approach primarily. Stressing as we are rehabilitation, setting up as we have set up the first real program that will make rehabilitation, I think, feasible by having financial assistance for it. And thirdly, setting up in our own operations in FHA a more direct, a more sympathetic, and a more efficient type of administration to deal with these problems. At the same time, we are having another new program which will, for the first time, give federal assistance to a program for middle-income housing. And this will be particularly effective in urban renewal areas, and it will enable us to build not only for the luxury market, but also for the middle-income market, so we will have less displacement and we will have more housing for the people of the same incomes or near the same incomes as are now living in these areas.
The Labor Department has under consideration proposals to create a youth corps to work in urban projects. It has been brought up on the Hill, and the president himself mentioned this on a television broadcast with Mrs. Roosevelt a few weeks ago. Have you discussed this within the administration?
We have discussed it within our own agency. We see great potentialities here, and we also see the great need for a very carefully supervised and thought-out program so that these people, if they are working, will be able to work effectively and will not cause confusion or cause resentment on the part of the people with whom they're working.
Are you going to propose such a program to the president?
We are watching the way this develops, and as this develops, we will be prepared to come in with our recommendations at the appropriate time.
Mrs. Craig.
Dr. Weaver, except for crusaders, pioneers, high-income, intellectual, non-whites, do you think that they are happy, particularly the Negroes are average when they move in with white people who don't want them to come? Are they happy? Do they like it? Is it good now?
Well, I think this. I think that the average Negro who moves doesn't move in to move to this neighbor or to that neighbor, but he moves to get the type of house that he wants to get. And this type of house, it may be in a neighborhood which is all Negro, it may be in a neighborhood which is so-called mixed, it may be in a neighborhood in which there are few Negroes. And I think that what he is concerned with is not living next door to somebody, but living in a house that is the house he wants, located where he wants it, just like every other American is interested in the same thing.
Well, Dr. Weaver, let me ask you this. I know that you are opposed outspokenly to what are known as Negro ghettos, the large aggregations of Negroes. But is it not true that it is through those large aggregations of Negroes living that you got four congressmen?
Yes, and I think if you had a wider dispersion, you might have more congressmen.
You do think so?
Because instead of having votes only in four congressional districts, you might have them in eight. And with a greater dispersion, particularly at the local governmental level, you would have more political influence than you have by being concentrated into a small
area. Did not
all
these four come from highly concentrated, concentrated neighborhood districts?
If those neighborhoods had been 60 or 70% instead of 100%, you still would probably have had your four congressmen, and you might have had other congressmen from other neighborhoods where the others would have been living.
And you'd like a semi-ghetto?
I don't like any kind of ghetto.
We have about 3.5 minutes. Mr. Shearer.
Dr. Weaver, since the big cities are turning more and more Democratic, wouldn't you expect to find a certain Republican lack of enthusiasm for creating a cabinet-level post of Department of Urban Affairs?
Well, I don't know. I think that the problems of the central city are really the problems of the whole metropolitan area. When we are talking about these problems, it's more than housing, it's more than urban renewal, it's mass transportation, it's adequate community facilities, it's planning for the total metropolitan area. And let me say, I think, sir, that many people are coming to understand that unless the heart of the metropolitan area, the central city, is healthy, the whole metropolitan area suffers. So this is not something of only central cities.
Would you look for a cabinet-level Department of Urban Affairs this year?
I think that many people are more knowledgeable than I expected.
Mr. Spivak?
The president said, in his recent message at least, that it is the responsibility of the federal government to provide decent housing for all of our people. Do you think that is the responsibility of the federal government?
Well, I think that, if I may paraphrase that, I think that the meaning there is that it is the responsibility of the federal government to provide such tools as will permit the family, by doing something itself and not waiting for it to come to it with a special delivery stamp delivery.
The president's words were in the message, "Our policy for housing and community development must be directed towards the accomplishment of three basic national objectives, to provide decent housing for all of our people."
Yes.
Now, you feel that does not mean that the federal government is to provide, but to give the opportunity for others to provide it.
I think the rest of the speech talks of the partnership between private industry and government, and obviously this is the intent, I think.
One question on Washington. I've been told that Washington is one of the worst slum areas in the country. Now, this is a city that the federal government really runs. Why don't you do something really massive here and clean the slum up here in Washington?
Well, let me say that all of these programs have to be, by their very nature, of local origin. And we do not run our agency, the local government in Washington, although the local government in Washington is very close to the federal government. So any program of this type would have to be originated in the local government of Washington.
Well, how do you feel about that, though? Would you like to see that done?
Well, as a native Washingtonian, I would be delighted.
Mr. Braestrup.
I have one question bearing on what Ray asked you. Have you heard of any other candidates to head the new cabinet-level Department of Urban Affairs besides yourself?
Oh, heavens, yes.
Have you gotten any commitment yourself to be the head of the new cabinet-level
department? I don't think that one asks the president to commit himself to a position that is not yet created. So the answer is no.
Do you expect to head it?
I don't know.
Mr. Shearer.
Mr. Weaver, a lot of Republicans are saying that this administration has made a lot of noise but really accomplished very little so far. What would your response be to that?
Well, I think that's just wrong, and I think it's the usual thing that you expect when a new administration comes in. The old administration inevitably says this. It's almost standard for the course.
I think at that point I'll have to interrupt. I see that our time is running out.